Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Dan Mason. We got a show today. This is going to be good. This is going to be good. And I'm fired up for this one. Let me start everything out by saying happy Juneteenth to everybody. You know, this is amazing. Great day, great recognition, and I would be remiss. And I put on my Facebook, which is my Facebook. So, you know, I got to go back and say, if you are in McLennan County, Texas, hello, Waco, Marina, Robinson, Hewitt, Woodway. If you're in Waco, you have to go to Maryland's Gift Gallery at 818 Elm, we call Elm Street, Elm Avenue. And if you're going to buy anything, a Juneteenth t-shirt, a bracelet, anything, you go there. The reason why you go there, Marilyn and Dwayne Bank have had their business there. When I came to Waco, they were already establishing there. They were there during with drug sales all up and down the streets, everything, you know, shootings, all that. They stayed there, and they were stable in that community. So if we want to celebrate Juneteenth, I understand that Walmart will be selling things and Target and everybody now. All of a sudden, it's okay to be Juneteenth-ish. That's a word. So everybody's going to be there. But I'm going to say put your dollars in that black community with those black businesses who have been there from the beginning, who have been in the struggle with you. And Maryland's Gift Gallery and Sound World, 818 Elm Street. And y'all know I don't do commercials. I don't have sponsors. I pay for all this. I keep it that way. So I don't have to deal with anybody's feelings. So when I shout out a place, is somebody that's important to me. Marilyn Dwayne have been in my corner from Stan's day one rookie, riding in a car and training. And a rising tide lifts all boats. So you guys, if you're going to, don't, you know, Target, Walmart, oh, we're here, let's get a Juneteenth t-shirt. No. Why don't you skip that and go over to Marilyn's Gift Gallery, 818 Elm Street. Or Elm Avenue, for those who Siri will say, I don't know, I'm not seeing Elm Street. Over on the east side, go over there and get your gear. Give your dollars. And that's one thing black people fail to do. They will not put their dollars into their community. We can all be pro-black and we can all come on here and say, yeah, I support. But where's your money going? Real recognized is real. And I can tell you, Marilyn and Dwayne Banks are two of the realest people I have ever met in the city of Waco. And when y'all will hear me say the queen, I don't say it in how everybody throws it out, because back in the 90s, I was calling Marilyn Banks the queen. You know, not because she purports herself that way, but because the way she gives to the community, she gives tirelessly. She's always been there, and she's been in my corner. So I'm going to give a shout-out to Marilyn Dwayne, Maryland's Gift Gallery, 818 Elm Street, Elm Avenue, on your GPS. Go there and do what you need to do. Buy your gear there. Be authentic and be real. You know, Walmart, everybody now feels safe to put Juneteenth stuff on the racks for y'all to buy. Go to the core, black or white or whatever. Go there and learn. Last thing, not last thing, because my granddaughter is going to be last, but last thing I want to put in regards to that is, you know, when we talk about giving back to the community, where are your dollars going? If you're driving out of your community to get something that you can get in your community. Do not come on here and be so pro-black, or somebody might call you out. I'm not saying I have a problem with white businesses, or anybody goes, oh, you don't like white businesses. No, Walmart's going to be fine when Stan goes off the air. I'm saying real recognizes real, and iron sharpens iron. Don't talk about it, be about it. Juneteenth is not just a black holiday. And I want to say this because I don't want people trashing Texas. Texas was glass. Blah, blah. Texas was this. Let me tell you all, when I moved there in 1993, Juneteenth was accepted statewide. There was parades. And so this is 93. So, yeah, they might have been last to get the word, so on and so forth. But you know what? Juneteenth, and I didn't even know what Juneteenth was till I moved there. And it was, the police departments participated, the city governments participated in these parades. So this was not a black and white thing. This was a celebration thing. And Texas, though they may have been last for whatever reasons at that time, I can tell you when I was there, all over Texas, there were Juneteenth parades that were recognized and acknowledged by the city. So that, you know, Texas got some thoughts. They got plenty of stuff we can do tons of shows on. But you know what? They're trying in some areas. And so with that, last thing I want to say before I get into these co-hosts and welcome them, and good morning, Facebook. Good morning, Waco. Good morning, ATL. Good morning, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, hometown. You know, let me just say happy birthday to my granddaughter, Elise. That, for anybody that follows my Facebook page, that's my baby, that's my heart. And she grows, and I watch her, and I'm so proud of her. I will show up like Debo. I'll get on the plane in an orange jumpsuit with some slides, and I'm going to have various screenshots on my phone. Y'all don't have to waste tax dollars on a mugshot. Just pick one out and put in what you want. That's my baby. So if I get that call, and I know Joe will probably be in the picture with me because I'm Joe, I'm on the way. So happy birthday, Elise. Pawpaw loves you. And we're going to get right on into this show. Let me say, John, you crying already, bro? I just got started, man. You know, Big John, good morning, man.
Hey, man, good morning, man. It's been a real emotional week, man. Last week was seeing my granddaughter go to our senior prom. Mm-hmm. This week was a week filled of grandchildren graduation. So, man, yeah, it's been a draining week financially as well as emotionally, but it was all worth it, man. Like, definitely worth it, man.
But, you know, don't sell the prom short because you and I had that talk. And you used to have, like, a nervous father because we were on the phone and said, they're going to have to be back at the house at this time. And if it don't happen, I'm going to be, John, no, you going to call me? I'll call you because you know what? I got pennies here. I can scrape together bus fare. You know, I'm going to get there. I ain't going to let you go there by yourself, you know. Now we got to clarify that. He's talking to the dogs, everybody. last week it got ugly. What's up, G? You know, good morning, Tanya. All right, let's go down. Joe's gonna be in and out. Joe got a bunch of stuff going on in the house. You know, he trying to put up a ceiling fan. It's gonna be backwards, upside down, and on the wall. But anyway, G said what? You know, over the last few shows, you know, we talked about varying topics, probably the last 8 or 9 shows. And this phrase, emotional intelligence, kept popping out. You know, the chief would keep introducing this phrase, emotional intelligence. And Joe would expound on it, and I'd talk a little bit about it. And it's something that we don't hear in the major media. And you guys are going to get to hear it here first today from someone who's totally sold out to this concept. And it's amazing because if you don't think we're cutting edge, oh, they're just a Facebook Live and a YouTube program and a Blog Talk program. Most of the stuff we've done, probably 80% of what we've said, police departments are now implementing. And I'm talking about over 4.5 years of doing these shows. They're finally catching up with us. Shout out to Rachel Pate. Rachel is going to be on the police advisory board for the Waco Police Department. Big shout out to her. We have screened on this show and advocated for citizen inclusion in the hiring practice. And God bless, Waco PD has woke up and said, let's explore this. We need this. Shout out, Chief Victorian. Love you. Watch what you're doing. I see it from here. I watch what you're doing. I mean, you're making change where change is needed. God bless you. You know, and Rachel, girl, you earned it. You know, because I don't sit down with just anybody and say, ask me anything you want. You know, but you're real. Real recognized is real. You're 100. You were in. Props to you, girl. Go on, do the thing. Get the best police officer, because that city deserves the best. So you get the best in there. Now we're going to go down without further ado. Chief Jim Devlin, the man. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning. What are we talking about? I got to throw a little bit of humor in there. I appreciate having the platform today. I'll preface this and say that I am not the expert on this. Let's just get that out there. So I'm continuing to do my research and look into this particular topic as it relates to law enforcement. There's a ton of stuff out there. Just Google it. Just Google emotional intelligence and look and see what's available. Some folks may say if this is going to sound like a self-help topic. And it kind of is, to be honest with you. But we'll get into the crux of it. I'm excited to be here. It's been a crazy week. There's some training on this emotional intelligence. Looking forward to doing some more stuff. We kind of talked, Stan and I talked a little offline about becoming a trainer in this, and specifically for law enforcement. But without, I'll let you get to Joe. I know I'm waiting for that ceiling fan to fall out. In the background, get on that presidential desk there. But anyways, let's get to Joe, and then we'll kick this topic off. Man.
Big Joe, what's up, bro? Oh, my God, the Oval Office. Excuse me, hold on. There's a red hat over off of your right shoulder, sitting up underneath.
Lie like a rug.
Good morning, brother. How you doing?
Good. I'm a proponent of this subject, a big proponent. And it's interesting because if you read the components of this topic, you'll find one of the things of emotional intelligence is being self-aware.
Mm.
And I think she fits that right off the bat.
Yes, he does.
Let me throw this skew real quick for people particularly in Texas. The government this week signed a bill that said you don't need background checks to buy a weapon. They pushed the idea of having ID for voters. So which one's more dangerous?
That part.
I'm sorry. See, I'm with you, brother. I think this is particularly for law enforcement. Emotional intelligence is where we got to go.
You know, Chief, I'll say before we hand everything over to you, it's, you know, I want this for the community too, because I think that the community has suffered because they don't understand us as law enforcement. Because, A, we don't dialogue law enforcement in the community primarily, and, B, because there is a percentage of our training or our beliefs or doctrine or operating orders, general orders, whatever we want, that we keep secret. And we make people jump through hoops to see how we do our job. So today is going to be open, and it's going to be real, you know, and we're just going to go right out there with it. And we got the man in here to do it, Chief Devlin. This show today is yours, brother. You had the reins. Talk to us.
Well, it's our show. Let's get real. It's our show. I'm sure somebody's going to come in and, well, anyway, we'll deal with that. you know, I'll have my self-awareness in check. I'm gonna take a step back. I'm gonna go back many years in this business. I know that Joe and Stan, and even John, because I'm going to use John as part of this dynamic from his experience and the things that he has seen in his life. But the obvious question is, why are there good cops and why are there not good cops? What is the difference between the two? Why is it that we have officers that can go from the deceased person, decomposing body, the worst of the worst, a child homicide, work that incident, and then go to the verbal disturbance at some residence and not be an absolute basket case? What is the difference between those officers? Why is it that some can do it and some can't do it? You know, there's this emotional intelligence, there's a lot of psychology behind it. It's all psychology if you really look at what the crux of this thing is. But my question became, why do we have these differing sets of emotions or the differing actions by officers, especially what we see now? It's pretty evident. We have the ones that you see on TV, the ones that you're watching on social media, videos, those people have lost control. They have lost, and I always put it as mental control. And so when I teach at the academy, specifically in defensive tactics, you have to remain focused in your mental control, because once you lose mental control, that's when excessive force takes place, right, in the battle. I'm not talking about legally using force against somebody. I'm not talking about illegally. I'm talking about taking somebody into custody who has broken the law. They know that they've broken the law. They understand that they've broken it, and we take them to custody and they resist. And we are, by the Constitution of the United States, allowed to use only the force necessary to bring that person into custody. And that has never changed. You go above and beyond that, that's when we have issues. So I started to think years ago, why is it that we've got some of these officers that can go into, it doesn't look like the community, right? They're serving a community, but they don't look like the people that they serve, number one. But they have respect, like you would not believe in that particular community because of the way they act and the way that they operate. You know, they say, hey, you guys need to do this over here, and they do it. Why is that happening with that officer? But then you get a newer officer that comes in, right? And the three of us are sitting there, and they say, you need to do this. And they go, let's show them. I'm not going to fill up the swear jar because I can do it all day today. But, you know, there's some, you know, go pack sand, man, because I'm not. But you haven't earned that respect yet. So there's a correlation between those two, and I think it's this area of emotional intelligence, right? So kind of work, when we wrap this thing up at the end, this is for John, okay? Specifically for John. So I know that in your life, right, your dealings and the things the crew that you ran, y'all came across law enforcement, and there were cops that y'all didn't mess with because of respect. And I'm not talking about dirty cops. I'm not talking about ones that are on tape that, you know, we get involved in some sort of criminal activity because y'all tried to screw them around, but there were cops there that treated you right and did certain things. So just keep that in mind, because I want to hear your answer when we finish this whole thing and see if it matches up as to what I think it is. Of why you guys use those officers that particular way. All right. So that's your assignment, John. That's for you in the show today. But it becomes out, what is emotional intelligence? What is this thing? What is this that we're talking about? And basically, it's your ability to manage your emotions, right? And I'm going to read definitions straight off of the internet. And I want you to put this in the context of law enforcement. It's namely emotional awareness, or the ability to identify and name one's own emotions. The ability to harness those emotions, to apply them to tasks like thinking and problem solving, the ability to manage those emotions, which includes both regulating your own emotions and helping others with their emotions when necessary. So when you read that, you think, well, isn't that what we're supposed to be doing in law enforcement, and specifically the problem-solving issue? When we start to break this down, it is actually going to sound so simple that you're going to be thinking to yourself, that is just the dumbest thing. How can we not? Why are we in the position that we're in? Why have we not figured this out? Keep it in this context. I watched a video the other day, and I'm on my iPad, and I got my Facebook up over here. I'm gonna put a bunch of links down in the comments later on, so people can look at some of this stuff. But I watched a video yesterday that one of my friends, who's an officer, is a chief, who posted. And it was about procedural justice. It was out of California, and it's a traffic stop. It's a black male that gets stopped on a traffic stop. He's got his hoodie on, and he's sitting behind the wheel. And the officer starts to walk the vehicle, and then it shifts into they're right outside a coffee shop. I've seen this video before, and it takes that traffic stop and out from the cars, and they transition into the coffee shop. And the young man says, I knew I was going to get stopped. And the officer says, why did you know you're going to get stopped? Just some black male driving around, I got a hoodie on, And the officer tells him, hey, I don't want you to be afraid of the traffic stop. I stopped you simply because you rolled through the stop sign. You were right there in front of me, and I didn't know the color of your skin when I stopped you or when you rolled the stop sign. So it goes on through this dialogue and this conversation, and it basically transitions into, the driver, the black male, says, I've never had a conversation with an officer like this. I hope you remember this conversation when you made contact with me at my window. Because there's a very valid reason why I'm having this conversation. And they transition back out to the cars, and this gentleman's got a young son sitting in the back seat with the window down, looking back at the lights on the squad car. And that's a real deal. I mean, I'm not pushing that off anywhere to say that's not happening. That's legit. That's absolutely what that young man said is legit. I knew I was going to get out in the car. We talked about it on the show. I knew when I got out in the car, I was going to get stopped. Mm-hmm. It was black. So it's a real conversation, right? And it is in the context of procedural justice. But what I take into the context of emotional intelligence is, as that officer makes his way up there, right, after the young man said, I hope you remember this conversation because there's a good reason, and the future of his son, that officer doesn't get out with a boatload of attitude. Mm-hmm. He has his emotions in check. He walks up, he sees the little kid in the window, and says, hey, buddy, how you doing? He walks up to the gentleman and he said, good evening. He said, your license and insurance. And then it begins this conversation. There's no tension. There's none of this right here.
Mm-hmm.
Because the officer didn't get out with having his, better panties in a wad. He got out knowing, hey, this is just going to be a traffic stop. I don't know who this is. And again, it goes into probably more about, so do we have to write the ticket? Do we not write the ticket? Can the officer use discretion, et cetera? That goes beyond part of this topic. But that emotional intelligence is in check. For the law enforcement officer, he gets out, and it's a simple traffic stop. He gets out, and makes that contact, and nothing happens because it's a regular conversation between two men. I use that to transition into another piece, which is another one I'll put down in the link. There is a video that the CBS this morning did on an L.A. County traffic officer, right? I can't remember his name. I'll pull it up real quick because I saved it because I'm going to share this thing. He's a multi-year traffic officer, motor jock. Elton Simmons is his name. 30 years of being a motor jock. This guy's sole job is to write tickets, right? This is what he does, L.A. County, right? If you've ever been in California, you know what trafficking is like. He goes, he makes stop after stop after stop and writes citation after citation after citation. After 20-some-odd years of doing this, do you know how many complaints his department has received on him?
Zero.
Zero. Why is it that guy, and I'll tell you for those that don't know this,
not the assumption of the worst. All right, you understand? You know me. Is there anything positive about a traffic stop? I mean, you both have been stopped. I've been stopped. I mean, I've been stopped by the police before. I wasn't a cop all the time. It's a negative stop. You're either mad because they stopped or you're mad at yourself that you got caught. Right? It's one of the two. It's not an either or, right? So why is it that this guy has the ability to stop probably 40 people a day? And they're still telling how many tickets he writes. He has zero complaints. I'm gonna put the video on there. I'm gonna tell everybody, watch this guy work. Watch him. And look and see what he does. This goes back to what I said. Why is it that there are officers like Dalton that have the ability to do this job in the most negative situation and walk away with people thanking them? And I watched the video. There's a guy that they stopped. They asked him, how can you smile when you just received a citation? I don't know. I guess it's just his attitude. Right? You got a $300 ticket, and you got a smile on your face. Well, then you've done exactly what you need to do, right? So this idea comes back to the emotional intelligence. What is it that we need to get in check? And this is a two-way street, guys. So I'm going to talk about the context of law enforcement because that's what I am in control of, right? I am in control of an organization that I can push this information and get this emotional intelligence at the front of my organization, lead with this type of stuff, okay? But again, just back to, the other way, it's hard to regulate emotions when you're the victim of a crime, understandable, and that's what we come in. We have to have our own emotions in check as we make that contact when you're just out of it, right? So upset that, we are the ones that have to begin to de-escalate and use our own self-awareness to regulate your emotions. That's what those good officers were doing. I can't believe it. It's taken me 20-something years to figure it out. But that's what it is. In my minor research looking into this, is this emotional intelligence that makes the difference between these good officers and these bad officers. Of course, we all have our good and our bad days. You know, Stan, I'll say if we had an emotional intelligence assessment, you would score high. Same thing. There would be high scores in there. There's always something to work on. I don't think there can ever be a perfect one, right? And do we have our bad days? Sure, we have our bad days. But we also have self-awareness where we get ourselves in check, right? I am not one to enjoy being trained at. I have to stay on the job. When we show up on a call, I don't really know what's going on, and you're explaining to me what's happening, and now all of a sudden, your emotions turn me into the enemy, and you start screaming and yelling at me. I'm not really sure anybody really likes that. But what happens with certain officers that we know, right? They can turn a church service into a riot because they just show up and somebody says, you know what? F you. Whoa. Boom. Right. As I was working out this morning, I was thinking, in that particular situation, what does that hurt? If you tell me to go F myself, what does that hurt? Does that hurt my safety? Does it bother my family? It's just you not being in check is what it is. Mm-hmm. There's no point in me trying to overcome your ridiculousness with my ridiculousness. And that's how those problems end up getting solved, right? This is a vast problem. I mean, we can do multiple shows on this. We have talked about this. This topic has come up multiple times. And it's gotten to the point now for me that I am absolutely so interested in it that I've got a book that I read. Now, okay, big deal. Chief, you're reading a book. I shared it with Joe. I think it's a good piece of work to start navigating this topic. I've signed up with a company called Blue EQ. I just did a workshop on Thursday that went through your own self-assessment and things to do to enhance your emotional intelligence. And then there's further on training that I plan on taking and somehow figuring out pushing this into my organization. One of the interesting things that I did find out, and I'm going to shut up for a second because I know, you know, if y'all have something to say other than just me talking. When I did look, or I was trying to look into this topic as it relates specifically to law enforcement, there's very little out there.
Mm-hmm.
I found one article done by Police Chief Magazine, which is put out by the International Chiefs of Police, that talks about the need and how important emotional intelligence is in this business, but that's really about it. I may be missing something. I know this is ideas that are being pushed into some agencies, but I can't show them about how important I think this is. And not only is it great for the organization, but it's going to be excellent for the community. Because the bottom line is that you're getting everything in check, yourself in check, to solve problems. What are we supposed to be doing? You're solving problems, right? And again, some problems are jailable offenses. You know, where Joe's at, you know, he gets somebody that just killed somebody, they need to go to jail,
mm-hmm.
right? I think we all agree and understand that. But, you know, I'll go back to the example of Stan that you've used multiple times, the guy urinating in the park. Why are they urinating in the park? Because there's no bathrooms available in the park. Right? Why, you know, is that a constant problem that or city problem they have to deal with? Why don't we get bathrooms put out there, porta potty, something? Right? We don't have to have these type of offenses. That's the problem. You know, there's a lot of people that are involved in this emotional intelligence, and a lot of smarter people than myself that have done this research. Goldman is one. He defines this as understanding and managing your own emotions, recognizing and understanding the influence of emotions of others, which, again, correlates specifically back to us as law enforcement. Not only do I have to keep myself in check when I get that call, right, to show up, but I got to be constant enough and aware enough to manage, training you to manage your emotions, right? So you basically, it's being aware of emotions, driver behavior, and impact people positively or negatively, right? So because there's a negative, too. If I get out and as I say in the police academy, don't be that officer, you know, with mm-hmm. cool ugly sunglasses on and your haircut that looks like mine. What's that mean? It says if the officer gets out of the haircut like this, there's 100% chance you're going to get the ticket. Right? So, but they get out there, you know, they got that attitude, you know, I'm a warrior, and all that stuff. You know what you're going to get, especially if you have a lot of dealings with law enforcement. You, when that guy shows up, the victims or the complainants or wherever it is, as soon as they see that, they go, oh, man, they could have sent me somebody else. I already know how this is going to go. I'm telling you, because they read you. They read you. Everybody reads you. You know, so you've got to use those emotions for yourself and as well as others. Right? This is a dynamic process. How do we manage other people's emotions? How do we, and it's not saying, hey, calm down. That's never calm down.
Okay.
Right? But it's being you know, it's a whole dynamic of language, tone, pause, body language. Right? It's just a skill that you have got to work on. This is not something that you're just going to get. Right? Manage these emotions, especially when you're getting feedback, right? Meeting time deadlines, that would be more in the business world. Dealing with challenging relationships. What business is that? Us, right? And again, you guys name a positive contact. Name a positive call or service. If we go on, do they send us to go people knock on people's door to say hello, thank you for being a member of our community? Those aren't the calls we go on. Right, so we have this challenging dynamic because we go to people and see them at the worst moment.
Mm-hmm.
They can be anything. They can be anything from a murder to somebody who's broken their home. That's their lowest of the low, right then and there. Right, this is great managing when you don't have enough resources, navigating change, and working through setbacks and failure. The people that high emotional intelligence navigate that realm, those bullet points that I just gave, with ease and effect. which I believe correlates directly to what we do on the street as law enforcement. A lot of this stuff, I'm going to let you guys start talking in a second. I got a lot more. Anyway, I got a bunch of dynamics as to what this actually measures. A lot of this is used in the business world, right? These Fortune 500 companies, they're starting to look at Google. I have a list, but I don't know what I did with it. But a lot of these major companies are using this for productivity in their employees, right? Not only productivity, but job satisfaction, creation, productivity. I mean, that's what this stuff creates. It sounds goofy, and I know people. There are people in our profession that when they start to say, "Well, if law enforcement, you can't make law enforcement like into the business world," but you can, because I mean, why reinvent the wheel? There's tons of good stuff that's out there, but it goes back to what you said earlier, Stan. We're so close-minded that we don't want to show people what we're doing, you know, which is crazy. You know, I mean, come on in. You be part of the business, please come. You want to learn why we do DWI enforcement? You want to know why people get arrested, why we arrest them, how we arrest them? Not a secret. You know, come on in. This, according to my research and things that I've looked at, is very applicable to law enforcement. It actually would enhance our profession, I think, tenfold if we can push this within our own organizations.
I think if we took emotional intelligence and combined it with community policing, which you know I am 1,000% sold on, that is the answer. If we took those two and put them together and implemented that into the hiring process, what are we looking for? You go on a car lot, there's a whole bunch of cars out there, but you know what you want to drive. You know what's best for you. And I think we're going to have to be willing to do that. And it really amazes me. For you, you know, as a chief, and you're bringing this concept to us and showing us and teaching us and the Facebook listeners and the people that will watch this later, it's amazing that you have the guts to stand up and do it, because this is not a show somebody can stand up and say, I want to talk about emotional intelligence when your department is a catastrophe. You know, because in order for that officer to have that emotional sanity, that stability, to be able to even, I mean, chief, we've been in these roll calls. Well, you're fighting in roll call before you even get to the street, or you're in the locker room, and somebody's already ticked you off. And guess what? They got a badge and a gun like you. So you're hot before you even get to the street. And then you log into your computer, and the first thing you see is there's 25 calls holding, and 10 of them are in your beat. So guess what you're going to be doing for the next 3 or 4 hours, depending on what the call is. So now you're really upset, and you're really hot. Not because of the call load, but because of this clown that you dealt with before you even came out. So for you to really be pushing this and implementing it, it's a testament to the stability of your department, within your department, in the officer ranks and things. We don't tell the community. We're a little family, and we're existing, and we're, you know, I don't like broccoli, and we're putting up with each other's little crap, you know, like kids do. But, and that's how police departments really are behind the scenes. But for you to step out and do that, it's a testament, I think, to you to do this show, because there aren't a whole lot of chiefs that will come on here and even talk about this. And there are, thank you, Joe, there are less that would have the balls to come on here and present it when you've got infidelity, you've got officers who are trying to make their ends meet, you've got officers who are struggling with whatever kind of conditions that they didn't introduce. It came on from the job. So I think for you, you're the perfect person to do this. I think that it is needed. I think that a lot of, we hear community policing all the time, which I believe in 1,000%. But if you bring community policing without emotional intelligence, you just have a crime prevention unit. That's all you have.
You're 100% correct. And I mean, this thing is all encompassing. I mean, this is not only a professional issue, but it's a personal issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be the first one to tell you that I am not without fault. What you just said about getting mad at a road call, right, and that driving your day. I mean, that's why I think that this concept is, by the time we get done with this, is so simple. you know, basically you have your Rousseau moment before you go do anything else.
Thank you.
We don't do that. We don't do that. So your emotions come from the subconscious. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when we sit there, and this correlates directly to nonverbal communication. Even if you don't say anything, you're still pissed off. And your body tells you that, because that was everybody that you pissed off. So that nonverbal communication, right, that emotion runs out, right? It's on your face. It's expressive. You're standing there. Your stance changes a little bit, right? That's what I'm talking about, being aware. I'll tell you, I'm the first one that has, I've suffered that too. I mean, we all have. We, every single one of us have. You cannot be a human and not suffer a result of not having your emotions in check. Every single one of us have. That's the thing. It's being aware of what that situation does, and then it becomes more, or that emotion does, and then it becomes much more important in the profession how that's projected, right? That body language, that change in tone, that when you're actually speaking, but you're changing your facial expression, your body language changing. People read that. They think, I don't remember the actual number, but I know in the police academy, what is it, 80-some-odd percent of all communication is nonverbal?
82.
And yeah, so, I mean, you know. That's why I made that comment about that, don't be that guy, right? When you get out of the car, and you walk out. I mean, people know what that is. They're like, oh, we got this guy. If you get out of the vehicle and you say, hey, how are you doing? So what can I help you with? You know, you have a conversation like a human being, not a robot, right? People start to get a little more comfortable with you, right? And they're willing to open up a little bit. You know, the thing that's interesting, I think, is when your emotions run high, they actually change your brain function. They diminish your cognitive thinking abilities and decision-making powers. Even your interpersonal skills. I mean, if you think about it, how when you're mad about something, right, you're upset, how well do you think?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll what's that?
Fight or flight syndrome.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you personal experience. When I've been mad, I'm a human being. I have been mad, right? Never used excessive force on anybody, but I've been pretty upset at some people as a result of things in my career. Right? And I didn't even know that I was doing it, but sometimes I would self-regulate and get myself in check. Right? So again, it goes back to why is there that good fire in their offices that can get into the middle of a fight and have a suspect on the ground, right? And I'm talking legitimate arrest, not some kind of hoagie, you know, officer acting out of the scope of their duties and being unconstitutional. I'm talking about an actual physical arrest because whether you want to hear it or not, people do resist arrest and they fight the police when they are wrong, right? But being on the ground, fighting somebody, and then having time to pull your gun out of your holster and attempt to take it and kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not a law enforcement officer, what where does that push, right? A lot of people say, well, the grandma will be beaten, live, and you know what out. But we can. I can use the force necessary to get my gun. But I can't just, you know, get my gun away and then pick up a stick and start wailing you about the head and the neck. It's not supposed to happen that way. So that anger, those emotions, they get in the way, right, of that cognitive ability and the reasoning. As I call it, the human brain, right? You get out a little bit. We use it, and when we talk about active shooter response, there's the lizard brain and there's the human brain. When you get out of that lizard, you get away from that lizard brain, you get back to that human brain, the cognitive thinking abilities. What's right? What's wrong? What am I supposed to do? How do I do it? Right? What most people expect. And again, that goes back to what we're talking about here today.
Chief, let me...
every one of you on this panel know of an officer somewhere. Right? You don't have to name. But now that you're starting to hear about this stuff, right, and the research, because I know you guys probably looked a little bit before the show, but you can go back and you can pinpoint these things and go,
mm-hmm.
Oh, that's why. Mm-hmm. That's why they were the way they were. That's why they could walk into, go from the multi-million-dollar home with the, you know, the people that own the city, right, to the people that don't have a pot to piss in.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have that respect and that dignity,
mm-hmm.
right? We all know. We all know there are those that exist, right? So you know, you go, I'm going to talk to things in hurt a little bit of my new research that I got. Do those officers lack emotional intelligence? Do they have emotional intelligence? Where was their self-awareness and self-control? I mean, if you look at that video, based on what I see, I can tell you exactly what happened now. I can tell you. And it could have been, you know, could have been avoided had people been in check.
You know, Chief,
this is,
you know, this is so important because a lot of the shootings we see come off of traffic stops. And I'm not going to say the citizen's always right. But I think, and I'm certainly not speaking for the black community, I'm just speaking from my experience and the experience that I see and I hear from people. I think that where this is so important because policing is missing this one mark. Yes, I've been on the felony stops. I've been on the high-risk stops. I've been on the average traffic stop where anything can happen. But first thing is, I think people need to understand this point is that all that crap you see on TV is bullshit and it is not real. I do not get to come in to my sergeant after I've worked a two-year-old that's been sodomized, a traffic accident where a whole family is beheaded, a murder of some kid I knew. I don't get to come in and go, "Sarge, this is really bothering me," and take the rest of the week off with pay. That's bullshit. It does not happen that way. Your manning is set. I mean, everything, we can't afford to send anybody home. Because when we do, that other officer is ticked off because he's got to work that officer's beat and work his calls. And it is frustrating, but that is the nature of what we do. And I think that having an officer who can get out of the car and at least understand beyond it's not, you know, this person being stopped is not going to be a good feeling for them. Especially for me, and I'm speaking for Stan, not Joe or John. John, you can come on and say how you feel, but even when I was a police officer, it is not comfortable when I'm traveling with my wife, cars behind us, police car, I'm a police officer, and I'm thinking, oh, God, I'm going to get pulled over. They're gonna pull me over, and then I'm going to have to go through the whole 9 yards. And for us, a lot of times, you are scared because you don't know what you're getting in an officer. You don't know what is going to – it doesn't matter if you're a police officer. We've got situations where off-duty detectives have been killed. Because I think sometimes when you talk, we're talking emotional intelligence, at the same time, we can't train our officers to be afraid of that which they normally weren't afraid of before they came to the academy, and then teach them, when you get afraid, react this way. Because that emotional intelligence, and I say to these young officers, when I had them in Waco, some listened, some didn't, but that's all right, they'll learn. When you get out into that community, they don't care primarily if you are a black officer or a white officer. They do care how you treat them and how you respect them. And that community will back you. If you empathize with them, even if I have to take you to jail, you did this. But understand, you know, how do we make this better? How do we fix it? What kind of music do you listen to on the way to the jail? That way the jailers don't have to fight you when we get there and put you in a restraint chair. Emotional intelligence is important. It's not to say that Stan would do what this person did, but Stan is able to say, I understand why you did what you did. Claire and Mary Crow, that trained me. Yes, they were hard. And a lot of people didn't want to work for them because, A, they were hard, B, they knew the book. If you were right, they backed you. If you weren't, they'd tear your ass up. That's the way they were. Both of them were white, females. And their biggest thing was when you went into East Waco, you went into North Waco, you went into Parkside, when you went into the hood, you will treat these people with respect, period. Whether you were black or a white officer or Hispanic, they didn't care. You will treat these people with respect. You know, and they were pushing it. We didn't have that, of course, that title. But they grew up in East Waco, which a lot of people in Waco probably didn't know that. Well, you know now. They grew up in East Waco. So these two little white girls understood East Waco. And they weren't white Claire and white Mary. They were Claire and Mary. And so they were effective leaders and, for me, big influence on my life because I didn't see the fact that they were female or they were white. I listened to what they were telling me, and my life experience connected with them. What these two white ladies are telling me, I know it's true because I see it. And I think that is sort of missing, you know, in policing today, the ability to empathize. Not to say you agree with why this guy went to jail or this woman went to jail, but you can understand some of the situation that led up to it and act accordingly.
You're exactly right. So when you start looking at, you know, what are the dimensions for what we would consider emotional intelligence, and it depends on which model you use, but ultimately they're all the same. Whether you use Goldman, you use Baron, ultimately they have the same components in there. There's just different weights and categories and you know, how it's separated out. The biggest thing is when you do take your original assessment for measuring your emotional intelligence, you just got to be honest with yourself. I mean, you've got to be completely honest. You cannot try to BS your way through this test. And the one that I took, I'll just give you a quick synopsis of it. It took me about 15 minutes. I don't even really remember how many questions it was. I was sitting there just at the dinner table going through it, boom, 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 you know, asking them. And it was questions like, you know, things like, you know, what do you do when you get angry? You know, or I blow up when I get angry. So I agree strongly, disagree, or I agree strongly, agree, disagree, strongly disagree. And then it's a very simple exam. And so you go through it and you end up getting the results. But the areas that it measures both internal and external. The internals are bigger. Right? There's more of those than are the external. But, you know, you brought up empathy, right? It's what is the number one component of what they call social perception. So when you start going through these measures based on the questions, and again, I don't think it's 100%. I mean, I think it's accurate. I mean, I look at my score and my assessment, which I have here right in front of me. I think it's very accurate. I think it's completely accurate. But it's never going to be perfect. I mean, I use empathy as an example. You can have empathy. You can show empathy. You can bring about empathy. But being empathetic 100% of the time, it doesn't always happen. There's always going to be some aspect. You can't be empathetic and this goes on. So, yeah, no, I mean, you're 100% right. So, I mean, you're dealing with a murder suspect. You're just outright killing somebody or something. Yeah, you know, just about it because they're an evil person. You got empathy for the victim, but yeah, I can't have empathy for the suspect in that incident. I mean, we know that. But these dimensions, and I'll run through them really quick, but the big ones are self-regard, self-awareness, self-control. Those are internals. And then your externals are social perception and social effectiveness,
mm-hmm.
right? So when we start talking about those specifically the external, they fit 100% into this business, social perception and social effectiveness. The problem solving, right? How are you presenting yourself out there in the community, and what is it that you're doing to solve the problems?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the subcategories, I won't go through them because man, we'll be here all day, but if you're looking at for each one of the five skills, right, emotional intelligence skills, you're looking at five subdimensions for each one, right? So you're looking at 25 different things here, you know, optimism, self-respect, self-confidence, motivation, independence, introspection, belief or education, resiliency, emotional stability, stress tolerance, right, impulse control, openness. I'll tell you that when I went through this assessment, when I went through this training here this on Thursday, as a matter of fact, is when I did it. A lot of people, and there was 28, I think, that were involved in this program. One thing that I found very interesting is COVID. In fact, a lot of these people were business people. These were not law enforcement professionals. As a matter of fact, I was the only law enforcement professional in this thing. Period. When we broke out into our small groups, you know, and it was, you know, people from across the country, you know, they're like, what do you do? Where are you calling from? You know, is it crack of dawn there? Like, I'm in Texas. And, well, what do you do? I'm a chief of police. And they're like, what? There was one guy, I would consider him kind of I won't say he's a hipster. He looked more like a hippie. But they were in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Hey!
So it was these three guys. They worked for some manufacturing company. And they start talking, he's like, yeah, the boss lady owns this place. And she's big at stuff, right? And he said, but I'm having a hard time because my general manager is on my rear end because it's a manufacturing business, like production is slowing down because you're sitting there on this BS thing and you're doing it on Zoom, right? And so when he asked me what I did, I told him what I did, and I said, look, I'm just being honest with you. I know that's kind of a weird concept. You got a chief sitting here, but our cop or an officer. But I think that this is very important for our profession as we move forward with the reform issue.
Mm-hmm.
And he was fine. And I mean, he was kind of like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. He's like, oh, man, he's out. And that's, I mean, he had long hair and big old crazy beard, you know, and I know he probably smokes dope, but he was talking about doing yoga. But he's like, oh, man, that's great, man. Oh, peace for you, man. I mean, it was big props for him. He said, dude, I have no idea who he is. I mean, so that, to me, then that brings out, that's the emotional intelligence, connecting with somebody that doesn't look anything like me. And I say he's smoking dope. I don't know if he does or not. But it's just, if you saw somebody that stayed with me back in the 50s, you'd be like, ah, that's dope. Right? That's most amazing. But he and I would be, you know, polar opposites of one another, but here we are talking to each other, don't know anything about one another, right? And he's a cool dude. I spent 15, 20 minutes with him 3 or 4 times throughout the day in our sessions. And was a great guy.
He's from Harrisburg. Of course he was cool.
Well, he's talking about, dude, I should do yoga or something. I still don't know what that is. I was like, well, I'll
not yoga. Not yoga. Yoga.
I'll check that out. That's cool. But anyway, these things here that we were talking about, the internal ones, we're talking about 15 things that you need to work on that are metrics, right? So they give you ideas and again, there's follow-up and things you can do to learn about, you know, okay, well, I'll tell you right now, my overall score, not to brag, but my overall score was 89%.
Wow.
Right? Did you score that, Chief?
Oh, yeah, it is.
No, I'm going bull on this one. No, I disagree with myself. But they talk about, you know, the categories, you know, the reds are risk factors, orange are limiting, yellow is for growth, green are strength, and blue is basically you have success at that particular dimension. But it gives you so self-respect, which I found interesting. Self-respect is one that was mine. It actually was my lowest, and it's an 8, right? So when you go and you start looking at, well, okay, self-respect, you know, what does that mean, and where do I get ideas to fix that? But it's things like some high and low behavior, avoiding criticizing people, which I think I know why, because I do criticize, but it's constructive criticism. It doesn't say anything about constructive criticism, it just says criticize. Correct yourself willingly. I have a hard time correcting myself. Using time wisely. These are the things I highlight and thinking, yeah, that's me. So that self-respect part of it, that's something I want to work on. I want to push towards, okay, I'm going to take 3 of these things, I'm going to figure out. I'm going to take 2 bad and 1 good. And the one that I decided that was a positive one that I'm going to work on is influence. And the reason I picked influence is because of this program. So I'm going to push and influence this stuff amongst my folks and try to push it even further. So how do I garner more influence? Even though I got an 87% metric in it, you know, how do I continue to make that higher? Where do we push that? Where do we take that stuff? I mean, this is, to me, I'm not a scientific kind of guy. I mean, I like science. Not really nerdy, but man, I am blown away by this stuff, and I think it's important. It's not the only component. Let me say that this is not the end all be all fixing of law enforcement.
But it's amazing that the major media hasn't begun talking about this. And between you and Joe, we can go back probably 8-10 shows where this topic kept popping up. And I know for a lot of the listeners who may be listening, why do I need to know this? Why do I need to hear? I hear so much, police don't tell us everything. They're a secret society, which I will agree we are to a great degree. But now today what you're getting is an introduction into a concept, a problem-solving mechanism. This goes out to the one little rookie officer, Waco PD, that says we never talk about solutions here. We just I'm playing. This show's for you, buddy. I ain't gonna call you out by name. But why isn't the media pushing this? Why aren't the politicians? And I gotta go to your city council people. I gotta go to, you know, your mayors, your city managers. Why? Because they don't know. This has been in, like you said, Chief, this has been in business forever. But I said on this show countless times, policing has lacked the ability, willingness, capability, or just obviously ain't going to do it, to be able to sit down and say, we are a customer service-based organization. So Robert Peel said, we exist because the community allows us to exist, and we have not gone back to that community and said, what can we do better, absent a shooting, and it's time, we got to do something, so let's knee-jerk. No, we don't regularly say, give us our, what can we do better, where are we failing, what are we doing good? And what would you like to see? Would you come in and be a part of making that change? And I think that this is the key in opening up that door. Joe, I see the wheels turning, bro. Uh-oh, Big Joe left out. John, you want to jump in here real quick? You've been patiently waiting, and I know you've got something to add on this one.
No, I wanted to ask you guys a question because you guys are law enforcement, and I think I've seen more cops assault people when they have a chase behind them. So now you have adrenaline, and is this, I wanted to explain, is this this detachment from the emotional intelligence, or is this more so someone's pride or ego? Because it seemed to me that I think cops that would be normally classified as good cops, if they had to chase a suspect, they put mitts to them once they caught them, because it's like, how dare you run from type of thing. So either one of you have to elaborate on that.
I'll see a direct correlation to this. I mean, this is being well rounded in all situations, right? And I'm going to go back to the military. You got individuals that have served, that have been in some significantly critical situations, wartime activities, and their performance. Why is their performance beyond everybody else? Why is it that they see that everything together? Right? And then when it's done, it's done. How is their action and performance different than everybody else? But I think that this is the same thing. I've been for chase too, I'm not as skinny as I used to be. Not that I was ever really skinny, but it hurt my pride when he took off running. And I caught you. I mean, I never put my hands on anyone. I used the force necessary in order to effect the arrest and take him into custody. But It's what we call, I don't know how prominent this is across the nation, but we call it POP, piss off the police.
That's right.
And so your adrenaline is going, exactly what you said, John, right? You take off running, this happens in pursuits a lot, too. That emotion doesn't get in check, right? You're focused on, you're running for me. And you go through this emotional process, and it becomes angry. And it is a pride issue. Pride plays a big part in it, and you get angry, but you can't. You continue to run with that. You don't get. You don't turn it off.
You know, Chief.
I see pursuit after pursuit. I see foot chase after foot chase, where they chase the person down, they tackle them, give them your hands. That's it.
Chief, you bring up a good point, because I was going to talk about pursuit specifically in reference to John's question. When I trained rookies, I would say the department did, pursuits were like a great, we came out of the 90s where you could chase somebody till the wheels came off, bro, and it was good to go. You could wreck a patrol car, it didn't matter, you were trying to do the right thing. Then we started looking at the cost of the pursuit and why we're pursuing. We took a more educated look. But still within policies and procedures, there were gray areas. It varied between supervisors, who would allow a pursuit, who wouldn't, who would, why would they cancel this guy but not this guy? So it was very gray. And for me, I would always tell them, I don't pursue. for saying, if it's not you just robbed a store, you just raped a woman, you just shot somebody, then we're going to ride till the wheels fall off or till a supervisor tells me to cancel. But for these minor things like traffic violations, I would tell them, now emotional intelligence, I would say, you know, you're chasing this guy. You're caught up in emotion. You do get personal about it. He going to run from me? It's not like he saw me. That's Officer Mason. I'll pull over. They just see a patrol car. But you tend to internalize it. And then, see, this is what the professor won't tell you, and that's why we do this show. You'll hear it today. This is what's driving some of that. When you get back to the locker room, man, you let that guy get away from you, man, you got shook. You don't want to hear that. So what do we now do? We're willing to blow through the stop sign at 70 because that guy blew through at 60 because we got to catch up to him, of course, because the whole reason for chasing him is because he's speeding. So now what is speeding? Well, he's a hazard to the community. So now let's make two cars speeding. But I'm okay because I'm doing the right thing. And I would tell these rookies, what if this guy blows a stop sign and kills your wife and kids on the way to the grocery store? You okay with that? Are you going to just go back to work and write up your report and go, well, you know, he killed my wife and kids, but I got him? So if it's not all right for you, when you internalize what could happen in that pursuit, it's not right for anybody in that community. Would you do it in the gated neighborhood like you're doing it in the hood? This is what emotional intelligence is, being able to project yourself. Not just into the person you're dealing with, but the people who are around what you're dealing with, who can be impacted by the actions you're going to take. You know, the chief brought up George Floyd incident. Perfect example. What about those people on the sidewalk who were traumatized by what Derek Chauvin chose to do to George Floyd? They're carrying that. The young girl talked about how she can't sleep, how she feels she let George Floyd down. There were people standing there that said, I felt I should have done something. They couldn't do anything. Emotional intelligence. So we could have backed off. This is out of control. I'm out of control. Are there officers who should step in? And it's easy for us to say, well, this other officer should have stepped in. We saw what happened to the young lady in Buffalo who finally just got her retirement after how many years? Because she stepped in. Yeah, after she stepped in. So emotional intelligence needs to be not only mandated into police academies across this country, it should be federally mandated that it be taught in court, or at least state mandated, taught in course curriculum. It should be a part of every progressive police department who wants to reform, who wants to do better. It should be what you're looking for when you hire people, not how much they bench press. Now, how many languages they speak, because the most important language on the call is body language.
Let me throw this in before I got this moved off. There's a couple of things that the chief was talking about that I had to address. This emotional intelligence, do you want to remember the DARE program?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly what you're talking about is what they use. This program, it was called the MMPI, Missouri Multiple Person Index. This is exactly what it measured. Exactly. I know because I took it when I went to the DARE program, another program, and it did exactly this.
Another program.
Yeah, right. But it's the same test. Exactly the same game. And it gave you the same results. It says whether this guy was messed up. There were some other issues, underlying issues. Problem is that nobody listened to it. It also became an issue of, at least in my mind, and this is going to seem for our best son. He deals with quotes. Let me tell you why he deals with quotes. Because it takes away discretion. Again, we go back to a very base point, and that is that in most departments, the activities are driven by a relationship with money. People don't want to admit that,
mm-hmm.
but it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about emotional intelligence, the real problem for me, but again, being back in the field, is it's not only the receptiveness of the officers to change, for the, again, when we talk about the paradigm shift,
mm-hmm.
because it's coming. Just for those who don't know, get ready. It's coming to the department here. A good thing. But when we look at emotional intelligence in the MMPI stuff, you've got to have the structure in place to push it. There's some things that have to push through.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I'm a full on topic of the emotional intelligence or EQ that we're talking about, the discretion issue. And, I don't know about other legislatures across the country, but I know in Texas there's at least always some measure down every 2 years to get rid of discretion.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell anybody that's not law enforcement that's sitting here listening or will listen to this later, that is absolutely 100% dangerous. So that's not what you want.
That's bullshit.
Because, and again, in Texas, there are some things that we have that are on the books that there is no discretion, right? And I'm okay with it. Assault family violence, violation of protective orders. Those are two examples. You know, you shall make an arrest. You're mm-hmm. going to arrest them. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter what you think or what they think or what the victim thinks. Oh, it's okay. No, you're going to jail. It's mandated by law. I have no discretion. But everything else outside of those things, I have discretion on. Sorry for speeding. I don't have to write shit down. Right? And I go, you know, people will say, well, they do. Well, yeah, people do. But we can only start with one at a time. We got to push this one at a time. Right? As we continue on. This is not a thing that's going to happen tomorrow. This is a multi-year, multi-decade ideology that needs to be pushed into an organization.
Let's do this, Chief. And you didn't know I was going to do this, because I didn't know I was going to do it, but it just hit me. So we're going to do it for the sake of just people. Emotional intelligence. And this divided, jacked-up country we got right now, where nobody wants to hear anybody. Everybody's the enemy that doesn't agree with me or look like me. Let's help us as people. Let's put the police over here for a second. Because I think that really not just the Facebook people or the YouTube people or the behind the blue curtain people, but America really needs to get a fundamental understanding for them as an individual citizen about emotional intelligence so we can learn how to A, talk to each other, listen to each other, because personally Stan thinks America should not have come out of quarantine and been able to run the street. We should have been in a halfway house because we don't know how to act based upon all the things that have said it. So if we apply that to today, how does emotional intelligence help the average everyday person, because we all need it in some aspect of our life?
Let me go back to the point I opened up with. When we talk about emotional intelligence, put this in the playbook. You are pushing the right to vote, but yet you tell people that they can buy guns with no ID,
mm-hmm.
with no background checks. Let's talk about emotional intelligence here. So that does that mean, in theory, a criminal can buy a gun? And the answer is yes, because there's no background check. So the checks and balances, the wheels are coming off the cart. So the idea of emotional intelligence plays on every part mm-hmm. of the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in Texas, no, I haven't seen the full Texas bill yet, Joe. I'm waiting on it because, you know, it affects the city because some facilities, library, schools, and stuff like that. So I'm waiting to see what the bill entails. But there are parts, at least that I know, that it's not so much the background, it's the carrying. So here's the issue. You still can't buy the gun because of certain offenses, felonious offenses, and certain misdemeanors involving family violence and protective orders. But I think what it does for law enforcement, it limits our ability to question when we do see you carrying the gun. We have to make an automatic assumption that you meet the criteria unless you're committing
mm-hmm.
some other crime.
Mm-hmm.
So again, having read what I read was exactly not that. And that's the problem I have. So now I'm going to put an extra burden on the lawful citizens. It gives leeway to the unlawful citizens. So I have a problem. Again, when we talk about emotional intelligence, the idea was that when we talk about emotional intelligence, let's look at the application. Forbid the application come in when they wrote this bill. I will tell you, it did not.
But since you brought it, since you brought it toward the show, Chief, and that was brilliant because I, you know, I know people can leave this show and not really, they see the content we put out and they don't understand the backdrop and the mechanisms of the show. And so I'm going to say this, you know, this show and these guys, and Tony's not here, Izzy's not here, but none of us get paid to do this. We pay money to do this, and we never have not taken a call. We've done shows with the Texas president of the Proud Boys, who I vehemently disagree with, and we did not argue with him. We let him talk. We touched that third rail. We're not afraid to talk about, and it's easy for me, and, well, Joe's working again, but, you know, before he started working again, it's easy for us to talk about it before a chief of police who is working to come in and even be a part of this. Most chiefs will sit over there silent and only answer what they're asked, and then it's some geopolitical bullshit. You know, I mean, this show, this is what we do. Our emotional intelligence, Joe, we did a show on homeless people. Who were our guests? Homeless people. We did a show on drug addicts. Who were our guests? Drug addicts. John is sitting over there as a testament. John has made my life and my emotional understanding so much better by having a friendship with John. And you know, statistics would say that me and John are not supposed to talk. I'm supposed to hate John's gut.
I mean, I said that in the past. I mean, I love John. I love the perspective that he brings to the show. But then, you know, I know some Texas Johns, some folks that were in the game, they're deep in the game, and we got along. Even though we were, it's kind of like the movie, you know, like we're the one guy is in the mafia, and the other one's the cop, right? They have a mutual respect. They know what each other does, but. Not that John's in the game anymore, but, I mean, I know Texas John's too. You know, you get a lot of respect from him in the way that you treat him. So, I mean, you're exactly right. The dynamic is not supposed to be there between John and us.
Chief, would it be fair for me to say, and I don't ask this question lightly, because I know a lot of people don't understand policing. They think they do because they're married to a cop. Married to a cop and knowing what's in their head are two different things. So just because you're married to one doesn't mean you know everything, because trust me, you don't. You know, this job that we do, or I did, it's not black and white. It's not, there's so much gray, because we deal with that which society says bad people. A small demographic of them are good people in a bad moment when we interact with them. But nevertheless, somebody has to go over there. But this label that's put, you're good or you're bad, that is just absolutely it. And when you get the good officers who see that bad but choose to say, why is that bad there? And then help this person fix the bad things that they have no control over, that force them into a situation. It may not, that person may have to go to jail and do their time. But to me, you put them in jail for theft. You worked the call. But you did not solve the problem, because you did not deal with the societal mechanisms that were in place to put this person in a position to go steal a loaf of Wonder Bread. And I think that is where, and Joe has said it 1,000 times, we are social workers. Stop it. With this, we're not saying, yes, we are. That's what we deal with. 90% of our problems that get dropped on us are social work, aggravated social work. But it is what it is. And I think the problem, to a degree, we blame policing so much. It's not policing. It's disconnected city council people who want the seat but don't want the responsibility. It's city managers who just want to be in your city so they can move on to the next city. And it is police chiefs who department shop. They're at this department 2 years, then they're over at this department for 2 years, and they haven't even been there long enough. Joe, in 32 years, went back to work and is dealing with a hell of a lot. Joe can't probably say much about it. Joe is in a shit house of murders, and he's dealing with that. And I see when Joe and I talk, it used to be I would talk. Now it's, I listen to Joe because Joe needs to bet. Because he's dealing with shit that he can't control. He didn't create it. There's so much societal stuff that, adds in. And so, that emotional intelligence, I'd rather Joe vent to me than to go out there on a call and do something.
That's part of it. And that's why I said that this is one piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fossil one ends up becoming the portion of what I believe is going to end up being part of the wellness program.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much of this you can do. And when we start talking about mental health, mental and physical, because physical is just as important, right? Because it helps with the mental. But there's going to have to be a mechanism in place for some as I call them, tune-ups.
Absolutely.
Right? As we say, there's going to be some counseling to deal with some of these issues. Because, again, I can speak about this. I can talk about some of the great things I think that we are doing as far as emotional intelligence. I'll get to that in a second. But, I'm not in a community where there's dead bodies everywhere. That takes a toll, right? If we start talking about that emotional intelligence and that self-awareness, that becomes the issue of knowing that it's becoming a problem,
mm-hmm.
right? There are plenty of studies out there that lead to PTSD, officers are involved in issues or just dealing with the job. And then one day, boom, it's off the rails, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get an incident where they're actually on video popping somebody.
Or killing themselves.
So there's a lot of that, I think, that plays into this whole program, at least in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
for that checkup, those checks and balances as how we're doing this. One thing that I'll say where I found out that we were somewhat fortunate with this emotional intelligence is this role in the NDQ. I thought, well, what are we doing in my organization to make this happen? And whether it was luck or forethought, I have no idea how it happens, but at least in our section where we're conducting, and it goes back to what you said about the hiring process, when we're conducting our review boards, I went back and looked at the questions that we asked candidates, right, through the review panel, and on the review panel, I'm not on the review panel, it's a consortium of supervisors and field training officers and personnel in my agency, and the questions fall in line with emotional intelligence. I could have been happier when I started to look, I thought, And one very simple. Tell me about the last time you were angry and what did you do? Right? That seems like a very simple question, but when we start talking about impulse control, right? When we start talking about interpretation, empathy, emotional stability, that simple question can bring about answers for all of those metrics. Yeah, some of them lie, but I think our panel is really good at, pulling those people out. And there's going to be more. I'm going to ask and push more for a lot of this into our basic hiring process, and then there's going to be a component, which I believe will be for continuing ed officers. But to kind of sort of wrap some of this up, the job wants to offer, ultimately what ends up happening when you have solid emotional intelligence thought process or it is put into place within an organization. So let's talk about taking out the individual context.
Let me get you to hold that 1 second. We got a caller that I want to bring in real quick to let them get into you. 314 area code 4953. Good morning.
How you doing, Stan?
Good.
I was looking at your page here. And here's where lies another problem. You got a protest that's going on in one of your pages that's got signs referring to killer cops. Then you got four scenes where police officers are hugging kids.
Mm-hmm.
These kids have been made to think that police officers are out to kill them. And you know yourself that narrative is being espoused by a lot of sources within these communities. Police not out to kill these kids, but these kids are scared to death. Look at their faces. And that kind of action needs to stop. messages like this sign need to be had at the council meeting, not in the streets. I'm not telling kids mm-hmm. that police are out to target you, or police are profiling you, or police are trying to kill you. If you do that, now what are you producing? You're producing yet possibly another person that's going to have lack of respect for the authority and lack of wanting to comply. So there's a lot of broadband things that's wrong that need to be corrected. And I'm saying one thing, leave these kids, don't be putting these type of messages in a child's mind. The police are not out to kill them. Yes, there may be a small percentage that's mm-hmm. out there that's doing wrong. But mm-hmm. on the overall, hey, when I was coming up, we was happy to see a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
No. Stay here, because let me ask you. To those kids who are in some of these disenfranchised communities where the officers don't get out the car and interact with them socially, and they see the things that happen across America, and they see the things that happen in their neighborhood where their only contact with a police officer is negative, which my first contact with a police officer 10 years old was negative. Now, my second in Texas with two white officers was good. I became a police officer for 25 years. But I also say this, and I think, and I'm not going to be arrogant and try to assume that I'm trying to encompass your message, but when I hear the "it's a few bad apples" theory, I say that's bullshit. And I say this to say that. I don't think it's a few bad apples. The apple cart is rotten. It doesn't mean the orchard is not producing good fruit. Because in policing, we are very close, whether we like each other or whether we don't. Now, I'm telling, this is staying the police officer talking right now. There were a lot of guys I didn't like for whatever reason, and they didn't like me. But we were close. We knew each other to the degree of how we did the job. And the good officers know who the bad officers are. And we are in this condition in America today because some of the so-called good officers will not call out the bad officers. Why? Because those of us who are voters, and we practice the system, have not told our politicians, why don't we put whistleblower protection in place for state, county, and municipal officers like the federal officers have, so these good officers can call out the bad ones without being threatened, without being intimidated. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I will tell both sides of the story. There are some bad officers, and their asses need to be blown up, and there are some good officers, and I post the good officers' stuff.
There is two sides of the story. You got the same thing amongst the citizens. The citizens know who's doing the bad stuff, but they don't tell, now do they? They don't tell anonymously like they should, but they know who's doing the bad stuff. Even within some of their family, they know who's doing the bad stuff.
Say it again, brother, for the folks in the back that didn't hear you. That is one of the most aggravating things for police officers, and not to really go off the topic, but, you know, you brought up a good point, because when the officers come in, you don't get to be, like I said it last week on the show, we don't get to be protesters and professional victims, okay? When the officers come in to investigate the murder of Pookie Ray Ray or whoever, you don't get to be, I don't talk to the police, I don't snitch. Then you're out there protesting because the police can't solve Pookie's murder. I'm not disagreeing with you. That's why we...
And then when you have groups that start throwing buckets of water on police officers, throwing eggs at them, cursing them, why are you stopping me? Well, sooner or later, those guys are human beings. That's going to wear on them. And we know that. It's an all-around problem that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'll let you get back to, hey, you know, is that your
Come
picture
on,
when you were the police officer? Is that you in uniform?
Is that you in uniform
on this marquee?
It absolutely is.
Well, let me tell you something. You look mean. I would have been scared of you. I would have been pissing in my shoes. I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. Come on, John.
Yeah,
Stan, yeah, I think also we've got to keep in mind when we start talking about police officers are not coming into the community looking to kill young black men, we also have to keep in mind that all black men are not criminals and can't be treated that way. So it's a mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I don't want to jump ahead, but something that the chief started off talking about was there were certain officers who were able to come in the community. And it comes back down to that word respect. But, Chief, I want to talk about the emotional thing, right? Intelligence, right? Because this, for the layperson, right? And I'm going to use myself for an example. My wife brings her work home. And she brings home to work. Because, and that's what I think happens with a lot of officers. When they come, whatever happened last night at home may affect the way they do their job the next morning. And when they come home, they want to bring their work home. And your wife is not, or your spouse is not always emotionally accessible, if that makes sense. Because there was times that I wanted to hear about my wife's job. I listened and voiced my opinion, but I got the game on, and she turned it down the volume, and I'm looking at her, and I'm looking at the TV, and there's times where I'm not available for her emotionally. So how would you connect that with what we're talking about here today?
You actually answered your own question. It's about the self-awareness. What I learned here this last week in dealing with this EQ, or emotional intelligence, emotional quotient, is that in the business world, because again, it wasn't based for law enforcement, based on the business world, we're emotionally intelligent 85% of the time, right? It's work, right? When you're working for one of these companies that produces something, right? You're working for a profit business. You're making widgets or whatever the hell you're making, right? And you're on sales, boom, emotional intelligence, right? You're in an organization that promotes it. You have what you call psychological safety, which I'll get into just to kind of wrap this show up. But you're on, and then you go home and you turn it off, right? That's why I said this 100% all the time, right? What you're talking about is self-awareness. You now, looking back at it, you now have self-awareness that, I'm not, and I'm a victim of it too, my friend. I am a 100% victim of it because my day may have sucked, and so did my wife's. She comes in, she's like, you believe what happened at school today? And I'm like, same thing, game. It's the same thing, it's self-awareness. So we as husbands, we as family, when we now know this, we recognize this, boom, we got to stop it. Full attention, right?
Mm-hmm.
To your loved one, to your wife, and you had to engage that conversation. Like, as hard as that is, you engage mm-hmm. that conversation. But what I found, and again, this is just Jim Devlin. It's the first conversation when my wife has had that day, and then it gets into my day. And so one of my constructive coping mechanisms is my wife, and there's something that she hasn't heard that. You know, and again, like Stan said, just being married to a cop, and you know what's going on. I try to explain to my wife as much as I can, at least those things that bother me as well, and listen to her and give her constructive criticism on the things that I think that she's there. Because she's my wife, she goes, you know what you're talking about, moves on, goes, does whatever. You know, so, right, but it's that type of conversation that you have with people. We can be on. We'd be on all day, right? Whatever your working hours are, 8 to 5, you know, working 6 to 6, whatever it is. But you also remember once you punch that clock and you start getting into the house, you got to be aware of this stuff too, right? This is why I also talk about that this is one piece of the program, and I really think the mental health component is still very important because we deal, in our profession, we deal with a lot of stuff that's not good for us, right? It's a constant bombardment. is a beatdown of your brain all day, most days. And it's not. People are yelling at you. It's things that you go on. That's another component there. And you've got to be able to navigate through a lot of this. I do believe, and at least from what I'm understanding, those that have the emotional intelligence or quotient a little bit higher, they're working on them and getting them checked. We don't have the addictive behaviors and alcoholism. We don't have the destructive behaviors. We don't have the lost family dynamics, right? Divorces and not speaking to your children and that type of stuff. That's probably not 100% all the time, at least from what I'm looking at right now. It seems to prove that this stuff takes care of a lot of that. But it's also that it's that social awareness, that awareness, that emotional awareness. This is not right. I don't feel good about this. I need to go do something about it.
And Chief, you know, that emotional awareness, and it's good for spouses to really listen to this too. And I know for me personally, one of the dynamics for me, and goes right with what you just said. If I can just break it down to the fundamental root that I hope people listening can understand. When you go to a car, we're talking Texas, 100 degrees for 10 straight days, dead bodies been dead a month. Joe, you're going to hear it. You're going to feel this. That smell. You can wash that uniform 10 times. That smell ain't leaving. You got to hang it outside in the sunlight and let the wind blow it out. When you walk in the house, you just spent 4 or 5 hours, 6 hours with a decomposed body. You're there. That smell is in your skin, your hair, your uniform, your shoes. It's everywhere. Yeah, and you come home. And as soon as you get home, what is that smell? I'm not blaming your significant other. They never smelled it. A decomposing human body smells like nothing you've ever smelled. It's unique and it's all to itself. And you come home and what is that smell? Now you automatically are cast back into the car you just worked, even though you're home, but you're struggling. You're saying they really don't want to hear this. They really don't need to hear this. So you bury it. Oh, it's a call I worked. You know, and you go through that, you have years of that, years that builds up on you, and you get to a point in your life where sometimes you shut down and your significant other can take it as it's an emotional disconnect. It's not. It's a safety mechanism. You don't want to know. There are some things I've dealt with. I've moved beyond, you know, let's just let that go. You don't want to know. And that's when your relationship is strong, reading your partner to know when they – not shut down, but just say, I don't want to talk about it. It's because you don't want to know. Joe, you're the expert.
It's, you talking about social media. I had a 14-year-old get shot in the chest because of social media. My officer that responded to the call, she finally found out who the victim was, fell out of the station. And her reaction was that I just picked this child up last week on another domestic. So that means there are certain things that even at this point, I will not. I think all of us know that you do not discuss it because you have to compartmentalize. I think one of the things that when I'm talking about, and I've begun to talk with my other officers, is that are there times when you get it wrong? Your mind doesn't shut off when you sleep and go, would you just shut the fuck up?
Exactly.
And for most people, they don't get that. And that applies across the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
The question becomes, again, if it talks about part of what we're talking about today, is self-actualization. Now, when we talk about self-actualization, it deals with all the emotional intelligence, but primarily it deals with the one. The one is you. How do you take that one and turn that one instead of 0.5 back to a whole one?
That part.
That thing, that's what I get. I mean, for me, I read science fiction. I read Mein Kampf. I've done with that. But I read.
I can't tell, again, going back to what you just said, I can't tell my wife or my family what I'm doing, how I've done, how I move. Because all that stuff, because now I'm taking my emotional intelligence and putting it, and unpacking it, and putting it in the suitcase when it shouldn't be.
Exactly.
Part of that, you know, because part of the emotional intelligence is, I believe it says, they don't sugarcoat the truth, and they apologize when they're wrong. Now, let's just talk about those two right there. They apologize when they're wrong. How deep is that? How deep is that? And don't sugarcoat the truth. If we, in our profession, can we tell the truth all the time?
No.
No. No, let's be clear. Let's be clear. Crystal clear. I can't tell that parent who lost that child. Well, your son just shot somebody last week. I can't tell that person who was sexually assaulted that the offender was released because the court systems are fucked up. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, who does that encompass? That encompasses me because I cannot necessarily tell the truth all the time. I go back to my original statement. The self-actualization is where we have to focus this thing called police work with emotional intelligence if we're going to go forward. If the paradigm is going to shift, that's such. Even if we look at George Floyd, if he had self-actualization and understood that this was another human being, he wouldn't have done half this shit he did.
Not only that, but I mean, I think it got to the point where, you know, as they were dealing with George Floyd on the ground, and I mean, y'all dubbing out before if I'm wrong or not, but then you've got the citizens there screaming, you know, hey, get off him, get off. Their mindset was like, they're too far in. And what do you, you're a citizen, shut up. You don't know what you did. And so, so you have this whole mix of just worst possible situation that created that, right? But I mean, again, had that officer, those officers back off, came George Floyd's rescue position, would we ever even know who George Floyd is?
You know, Chief, and to your point, I can tell you, you know, and this is my personal experience, you know, I know black, white, Hispanic, rich, poor, homeless, there are good people at every call you go to.
Yeah.
They're there. They're watching you. They may not come up front. They may not speak for you. But when you go out and you work the call and you're being professional and you're doing professional things, and to a lot of these officers, if you don't have anything, shut up. Just because the media puts a mic in front of you doesn't mean you need to talk.
Right.
And be aware of this on murder scenes. Hello, Waco PD. And I'll call them out on this because that's my experience. Just because the media came to you doesn't mean you need to be on mic. There are people out there who maybe, just maybe, they would have spoken to you until that microphone came. They got to live there. When we leave, they live there. So just be cognizant. Emotional intelligence. If Stan goes somewhere, I knew the media is following me. They want to see who talks to Stan so they can go get an interview. They may never talk to me. They're going to go get an interview from them because that person came up to me and we talked for a while. Be cognizant of that. That is emotional intelligence. That person has to live in Sherman Manor, Trimwood, Estella Max, and Cape Ross, South Carolina. They got to live there when Stan goes home. And if you're going to be 100, we did a show last week, Ride or Die. Ride or Die for the truth, not Black Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter or All Lives Matter. You know, you ride or die for the truth, and the truth is blessed with the individual you're dealing with in the moment because they're going to remember you. So you should remember them. And just to sacrifice officers, the sacrifice somebody makes to walk across a parking lot or a sidewalk to talk to you in the middle of an active murder investigation, don't take that as it's bullshit. It is a sacrifice. Because when you go home to the white picket fence and 2.5 kids in the gated community, these people have to live with the fact you talk to the cops. Joe, you do homicides.
The beauty of this show is that as we sit here and as a listening audience, they know we're in all different parts of the country. And guess what? This is universal.
Amen.
We're all shaking our heads.
Amen.
So that's the beauty of the truth. The truth, you can't misshape it. You can form it. But guess what? It's still going to be the truth. I don't care how you package it. I don't care how you put it in time. But what you just said is applicable across the ocean. And that is what we have to do.
Keep 9 minutes. Take control. Get last remarks. Take us out. You're going to be the voice to hear.
I'm going to bring this thing full circle. And I'm going to talk about, if we talk about individuals, I'm going to talk about organizations. And I'm just going to bring it up really quick. And I want to get to John and finish out my question. But when we're, and this is why this has become so important to me, but organizationally, if you are promoting emotional intelligence throughout the organization, it creates what they call psychological safety. Right? Now they find this in the business world, and psychological safety allows people to experiment, discuss ideas, take risks, keep feedback, learn from mistakes, and creates high-performing teams. Being a high-performing team is different for a company that's a for-profit company. It's different for a law enforcement agency where our main focus is people, right? So it's not to turn a dollar, but it's to create what we put together for the performance and problem-solving, right, in law enforcement, per se, right? That's what this ends up creating. So what you talked about earlier, Stan, about the ability for people to say that's not right or use that discretion to solve a problem versus taking somebody to jail, that's what creates the psychological safety. It creates the safety net for those individuals that work for the organizations to do that, right? So, whereas we've talked in the past, and 100% the truth, certain circumstances, certain departments, Gene Devlin can say, you know what, I'm not going to talk to this guy through this dope, I'm going to pour it out, or I've been poured out, so I didn't pour it out, you're going to get rid of it, you don't want to go to jail today, right? I'm going to go ahead and dump that on the ground. And there could be a certain officer in the organization that does the same thing on camera, and they go after that officer for a policy violation or destruction evidence. That's what the psychological safety net creates based on emotional intelligence. So we push it through, there's learner safety, counter safety, collaborator safety, inclusion safety, and all of this encompasses the emotional intelligence for the organization. So I think that for me, for a law enforcement administrator and professional, that's what I want to push. I want to have our employees have that psychological safety and say that's okay to go ahead and do that. Not break the law, gross violations of misconduct, but look at life and this job through a different lens to solve the problem, right? To grit down the root of the problem. Why are we continuing to come out here? Okay. What resources are available to us to fix it? It sounds great. It sounds like, okay, boom, that's what he's done. It's not the case. Well, it usually takes multiple times, multiple attempts to solve some problems. Some are very easy. I go back and I'll loop back to the skins example of urinating in the park. We're burning an officer's time. We saw somebody peeing in the park. Right. By the time, most of the time you get there, that person's not even there. But why are they urinating in the park? You know, maybe they're intoxicated. Maybe they need some help. Maybe there's a mental issue. But bottom line is, there's nowhere for them to safely go to the bathroom. Because even mental folks that are in crisis know they can use the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They know what a bathroom is. An intoxicated person, you know, probably not going to do it in the middle of the park if there's a bathroom available to them. At least that's my assumption. So what is the crux of the problem? Is this a mental health issue you continue to go on? Is this an economic issue? You know, why are these feeling the loaf of bread? I mean, that to me, when that call comes out, there was one this week, Stan, I didn't even get to tell you, but they were loading up diapers and paper towels. That's what they were stealing from a local business, right? A big shopping center that's already done in March. Right, so my question is, it wasn't our call. It was another neighboring agency's call. But my first thought is I was driving around the Fulton City. Why are they stealing diapers and paper towels? And automatically my mind starts to go,
know, the diapers are probably pretty easy. It's not like you sell them on the black market. Maybe they do. Maybe there's a black market for diapers in Waco or McLean County. I have no idea. but most likely that's an issue that they can't afford them. That's my first thought.
Mm-hmm.
Paper towels, I don't know. I mean, well, why would you steal paper towels? I mean, I'm going to steal something that's going to be, you know, PEDs and something good, right? But not paper towels, diapers. So my thought was, well, we respond, and that officer shows up. How are they going to handle that situation? Are they going to make the arrest, or what are they going to do? I don't know what happens. I don't know the outcome of that. I have other business to take care of. But I would like to think that in my organization that the officers would have the latitude, right, to talk to the owner of the property that's being stolen and the person that's stealing it and say, why? Why is this happening? And then make a choice to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because in my mind, and again, I don't know anything about it, but I just make an assumption that they're stealing diapers for a baby. So there's a baby somewhere. The fact that taking a parent and putting them in jail away from the baby that doesn't have diapers, because that's why they're stealing in the first place. So that's just an example. That's that creation of psychological safety, and that's what I'm attempting to do in our organization. I think law enforcement needs to do as a whole to create that ability to work within that gray area. Again, there's things in this business that you're just going to have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Assault and family violence in Texas, mm-hmm. You make contact with somebody, you're going to jail. No questions about it. A documentation of a report. But if you're there, you're going to jail. You violate a protective order, you're going to jail. Everything else is in that realm of the discretion of what is we can do and what we can't do, right? How are we going to handle the situation? What's the problem? Something even simple to context on somebody because it's, yeah, having officers to stop them. And I'll tell you my personal opinion about writing tickets. I teach that section. I teach the patrol section to all law enforcement officers in McLennan County. If you come to the police academy, you're going to see me. I teach that. I can teach anybody to write a ticket. Anybody in the show, anybody. I can teach you to write a ticket, but solving a problem becomes another issue. How many officers stop that person for that taillight violation and try to fix it for the person? How many of you walk around your car and check to make sure your brake lights work?
That part. You know, that part.
I don't know. Right? I don't know exactly until somebody tells me it's out. But is it evolved? Is it a short? You know, is this a new vehicle? Is it an old vehicle? Is there something I can get to? Maybe wiggle wires a little bit, see if it is out, pull the bulb, make sure. I mean, and that's what I'm talking about. Some places don't have the ability to do that because it's call. Now, they have the ability to make a traffic stop. And I get that. I understand it. Just because.
But you know what, Chief? If they don't have the ability, that's why God created warning tickets. It's just another block that you check on that ticket that costs money.
Right. Well, But even if you don't have the ability to do that, it is call driven, right? You're in a community that's back to back to back to back.
Mm-hmm.
You still have the ability to impart emotion. Every single contact you make, dang, I was wrong. But anyway, so I want to get the job. So those cops, when you were in the game, Why did y'all respect them? Why did y'all not mess with those cops?
And John, you can take your time in your answer. That's just the blog talk. But the Zoom is still going. So, and I make the YouTube for the Zoom, so we're good. Go ahead, bro.
Could you your question, Chief?
Yeah. You just let me know. So what we talked about today, is it true? I mean, again, I'm gonna defer back to, you know, your life and you being in the business and being in the game. I know they exist. I know they personally know they exist because I know Texas runs.
So, first and foremost, that word comes back up, respect. And the word integrity comes up. Integrity works two ways. Like, you and Joe may do your job with integrity and you're not trying to set me up. I'm also watching your integrity to see if you guys are trying to get money. Because if you're trying to make money off of me, then how can I respect you? If you're a cop that's doing dirty jobs, y'all partners, and I know that makes sure you're not a straight up guy. I tell me this dude just brought me back something, said that joke trying to link me to a kid. So I know why you joke. So integrity goes two ways. Like, it don't have to necessarily be the mic directed toward me. It could be the way that you work with your co-partners, with your co-workers. So I watch all those things about you, and it tells me about the character. Now, the next part of it is never personalizing anything. And I learned this lesson the hard way, because I remember one day, I don't know who was having a bad day. I think we might have both been having a bad day. He stuck his chest out, I stuck mine out. And you know what? The next day, I'm in the store, and he's like, yo, you can call him such and such. I'm like, word? And I came out the store. I was a big young boy. I had my white beater on, arms out. I'm like, yeah, we're going to fucking get out. Oh, shoot. Dan, take care of that, Dan. When you get out the car, he's going to help me. He pulls up. I start with the ice grilling. I start with all my, you know, street food stuff. Trying to entice him. He gets out the car and says, yo, man, what happened yesterday was yesterday, man. Today's a whole new day. Aren't we both entitled to a bad haircut? I looked like a fool. Now, that's kind of like what you're talking about, emotional intelligence. He had enough intelligence to diffuse what could have been an ongoing situation. And if it was ongoing with me, it was going to be ongoing with my team. His job would have been hard. You understand where I'm coming from? And I'm going to throw this last part about here, and I learned this in prison. You used to hear people always talk about firm, shut up, how am I doing?
Damn, that's control.
So, it's firm and fair, right? That terminology. I don't know where it came from, but I hear it all the time now, right? Most people ain't fair, and most people ain't firm.
Mm-hmm.
I got along with the most hated correctional officer, and he didn't get along with other officers. He didn't eat with them. He didn't hang with none of them. And a couple guards came over and said, yo, hey, Big Rock, let me ask you a question, man. We don't rock with him, and you know nobody in the population. Why do you get along so well? I said, because this dude, he won't give me an extra minute rep, but he won't beat me for a minute rep. Mm. Some of you dudes are coming here and lock this up 5 minutes early, right? And then there's some of you will come and say, hey, man, you want an extra half an hour, man? Yeah. Now everybody else looking like, wow, he let him out. Keep fair and firm. He plays it according to the book.
That part.
And people, according to the book, how can I be upset with you? I know what to expect from you. When he came in my unit, I look out the door, be like, this dude working, man. Take this down. He's going to come in here, take that down. He's here for 8 hours. When he leaves, we can put it back up. The two other shifts are not going to say anything.
Respect.
But this dude is according to policy.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a problem if you do your job to the letter. But don't be flimsy. Don't be flip-flop with it. You get with certain officers, now you got a little chip on your shoulder. You ride with the narcs today,
mm-hmm.
Now you want to act like you're a tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see you again, we're going to treat you like you was acting that day. In the hood, they got a saying now. They said, when I see you, keep that same energy. So you can't change the energy that you had yesterday when you come in. Unless you do what that other officer did to me when he said, hey man, we both have a bad haircut. And that was the end of it. And I felt like a jerk and fool in that situation. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Exactly what I said. You have these cats, specifically the one says, you know, we're both on top of the banner, and that's emotional though. That self-awareness saying, you know what, yesterday I should have done it. And now here I'm creating this problem as I get out. Here you are standing there ready to whoop and stomp him. And he says, defuse the situation. My bad. We're cool. Thank you.
One second, Chief. I want to go back to one thing that I said. We will turn off here, not personalizing the job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to elaborate on that for one second, right? I could never personally dislike you, Stan, or Joe if you did it correctly, right? So, say like, Top said to me one day, he said, man, I see that bulge, man. You know, he was talking about in my pocket. But he wasn't, you know, gutting. And he said, I'm almost willing to bet that you're dirty right now. He said, but I have no reason to come over there and mess with your guy. He said, my job is not to run around here and try to catch you. But once you break the law, you're gone. You understand? These people who, Joe's a drug dealer, Joe probably got something more. That's not your job to try to figure out whether or not Joe has something more. And this is just my understanding. Your job is, when Joe is found with something on him, to put the cuffs on and take them in.
You know, John, before I let the chief close this out, I usually, and this is probably the first show where I have not had to invoke James Baldwin. Y'all know I love James Baldwin. And I have not had to invoke, but I will invoke Claire and Mary Crook. And I will say this to every officer, wannabe officer, hoping to be officer, I'm getting out of their job, or sick of it, officer, or chief. Claire and Mary Crook, two white ladies in Waco, Texas. And by the way, Claire was the first female assistant chief in the history of Waco PD. Big props. She was my academy commandant when I went through in 93. And she is basically my mom in policing. She really raised me. So I'm going to give knowledge where or respect where respect is due. Claire and Mary both ingrained in me. When I left the academy, I worked for her sister, Mary Crook. And they said, you're going to be out here. I ain't going to be here all the time. You're going to have to make decisions. And, you know, and they made us carry our general order book, big-ass thick book. It was about this thing. I'm not lying to y'all. That thing. It was big. And we had to carry it, and we had to be able to produce it, and so on and so forth. And they would come out to a car. What does general order say you will do, not do? And I could read what that general order said or quote it. And they would say, not every sergeant was that way. Not every shift was that way. But their shifts were that way. You knew what you had to do. And she would say, well, why did you do this? And Stan did something that didn't exactly line up with general orders or didn't exactly make sense. It wasn't a write-up. It wasn't a disciplinary violation. And they would say, why did you do this? And I'd say, this. Their philosophy was this. Is it morally correct? Is it departmentally correct? And if you were correct in your thought, your analysis of this real-world crisis, and police officers deal with the shit that's unfolding in front of us, we don't have a script. We didn't know what was going to happen. We got to make decisions. Stan made a lot of wrong decisions, but these two ladies could understand. Based upon what I had to deal with, what my training was, what my procedures said, this is why Stan made the decision he made. There are a lot of Stans out there every day doing this job. But I wish there were more Claire and Mary Crooks out there who were willing to say, you know, the chief didn't like the decision you made, but I'll bite that bullet. You're not getting days off. Yeah, we next time do it this way or that way. It's a learning experience, but I see why you did what you did. You're thinking. You're applying logic. So I you know, I got to give them a mad shout out on the show, and I do, and I pay for it, so I do it. But because that is what's missing, and we're talking 90s here. And then I've got Joe here, progressive thinker, 30-some-odd years of experience. I got a chief of police here that are saying, let's move beyond working calls. Let's solve problems. So, you know, with that, I'm bowing out, Chief. You do the final. I don't need a final out to get out. You got John and Joe and your final comments, and you got the show, brother.
Yeah, I'll keep breezes going over a little bit.
We're not over. We're still running. Go ahead. You're good.
Joe's got Santa put up or something, I think. Thanks, brother. Yeah. Just a challenge. I'll fly out to LBI. A lot of us. I appreciate the opportunity to... But what you say?
How much is the ticket, son?
Hey, Joe, when you put some fan up, make sure you have your finger in a cup of water, all right?
Wow. Okay, bro, we got Joe. No problem.
As always, man, this has been an excellent opportunity, and I appreciate the fact that you let me come on.
Aquarius. Libra. Leo. Cancer. Yeah. Charles. Paul, Larry,
social social issues. Nobody, my parents did a very good job of them. And then I put, I'm going to hit it with this, right? I had one exercise. I never really told anybody this publicly. The people in the police academy know this, but when I went to the police academy, to next set us up, which is a good thing, which, just again, you're talking 93, right? They put us on a traffic stop. The driver, you were with another senior officer. The driver started acting up, running his mouth, throws his driver's license, F you, blah, 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 on and on and on. And we had no training yet, right? We I guess like one of the police academy. And he's the senior officer who actually had been in the academy a couple weeks prior to me actually getting there. He opens up the door and grabs the driver and yanks him out of the car by the collar and their hair and starts dragging him to the back of the car. And I grabbed the senior officer cadet and separated him from the suspect. I pushed the suspect down the ground and I grabbed the officer by his shirt and I pushed him back and I said, "What in the are you doing?" I had no training. I had no idea that you know, here's the long and short of this. They ran every cadet through. The only one who grabbed the senior officer was me and separated him from grabbing the motorists and beating the crap out of the motorists. And to me, it tells me that the emotional intelligence quotient was there. I didn't even know that I had. That's what baffles me about this stuff. I don't tell you the story to you know, brag upon myself or anything, but that's what officers need to be doing. They need to be stepping in when this stuff happens, right? I was just a 21-year-old kid who had 1 week of police academy training. I knew the difference between right and wrong.
That part. Amen.
Right? So we need to push that down to our cadets. We need to push that down to the people we're hiring, and we need to stay on top of them. We don't have these problems, and when we do have somebody step out of sorts, we need to grab them by the collar and show them back and say, "What in the ever you did?" Go ahead, John. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, I just sat here and thought about a great TV show, movie that illustrates
Colors.
A lot of the stuff that you're talking about.
Colors.
Colors.
Yeah, the Benedict guy. Who had Sean Penn and he was riding through the hood, the different neighborhoods, and everybody in every hood respected Hines.
Yep.
Right? That man was trying to make a name for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember, there was also a thing where he kind of jacked him up. Like, you think you really tough? You think you want a piece of me? That's how passionate he was about doing his job correctly.
Right.
And not spray painting kids in the face or doing that either. Stupid stuff. But in the end, because of the way Hines did his job, remember, when Sean Penn in the end,
Batman became Hines.
He got a partner. He became the Hines.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes officers like Jim Devlin, Sam Mason, Joe Mosley to get in the faces sometimes of these wannabe rogue cops and say, "Look, I'm not taking this crap." You know what I'm saying? And eventually, they become the Jeff Douglas and Masons and Mosley's of the police departments.
Hey, we're at that 2 minutes. Go ahead, Chief. I'm going to let you final word.
That movie was
classic.
I remember Cool Moe Dee and the song. I love the song.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I don't want
to. What you know about Cool Moe Dee?
There's some truth that rings through that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what John said.
Mm-hmm.
May not have been right, but it was law enforcement in the 80s, the way they handled their business. But the characters are true. You had this senior officer that had to get that one young one in check. And we know this because the three of us have done this thing from how we started. And don't think for a minute I have somebody get in check. Wasn't like the movie, but it was, let me explain something to you, son. And it was in an office by ourselves, and I learned a very valuable lesson.
And like training day, the office was the car. Yes. No, and just like training day, a lot of times when you're in patrol, the office is the car. Or the hood. Or on scene sometimes.
With that, though, I'm going to shut my pothole. But guys, look, y'all, appreciate it. I mean, thank you for allowing me to talk about this craziness. I mean, you're going to see more. I'm just not going to stop. I'm going to continue pushing this idea. I've already sent out at least two assessments to people in my staff that were just walking in my office and said, what are you doing? And I'm like, taking a class, get out. Anyway, so I'm going to start doing this and start pushing it. And then you get some leases and make people line on things that you usually could work on. I understand that people are listening. I did not run across free assessment. I know that there's probably one out there. Go online, just Google emotional intelligence or EQ free assessment. It's gonna be a valid deal. Check it out. See clear, see any core home. It's interesting and time changes so much. You know, I didn't say earlier COVID affected a lot of this stuff in emotional intelligence, and there's a lot of scientific data behind it, at least in the course that I took. It showed a lot of impulse control and basically stress levels went up because of COVID and because you were away from everybody. You didn't have that mechanism to vent to people and things of that nature. So everything became remote, but your environment has the ability to change a lot of this stuff. But stay with it, and again, it's a great idea for not only just helping you, but helping your organization.